You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Following the arrest of Freedom Flotilla activists last week, including New Zealanders Rana Hamida, Yusef Samoa, and Sam Leeson, the families of these activists, alongside the Green Party co-leaders, held a press conference yesterday where they called for the New Zealand government to fulfil its obligations to international humanitarian law. And as well, they answered questions from the media. Here are some recordings from the press conference.
Kia ora, I'm here today to speak on behalf of my younger brother, Yusef Samoor, who has been illegally and forcibly detained by Israeli occupation forces in international waters. Yusef comes from a loving Palestinian Christian family. He grew up right here in Aotearoa, New Zealand. Yusef is one of the most selfless people I know. Even as a child, he was always the first to give, even when he had nothing left for himself. Yusef's not a politician. He is not seeking attention nor glory. Yusef is a deeply compassionate New Zealander who found it difficult to turn away from injustice. Yusef has always believed from a young age with unshakable conviction that love and courage can move the world. That belief and the horror of watching the most recent Palestinian genocide unfold before his very eyes is what has led him to this very moment. Yusef sailed directly into danger, risking his very life with nothing but compassion and humanitarian aid on board. Not because he wanted to, but because our governments have failed to act. Today, I urge the New Zealand government to demonstrate the principled leadership that defines us as a nation, and to finally show the moral courage that people like Yusef, like Rana, and like Samuel have shown in abundance.
Representing my wife Shelley and Samuel's brothers and sisters. Samuel's one of eight children, and he grew up in Otaki, a little village north of Wellington. He is a young man who is full of compassion. What I'm really worried about is Samuel having his heart broken. He has got so close, they've all got so close to that beach, and all of those supplies that they have been carrying and organising for all these many, many weeks got so close, and now they've all been spoiled, they've all been taken. He spent the early part of this year with 3,000 other ordinary people trying to walk across the Sinai Desert, carrying milk powder, carrying supplies. Day after day, they tried to get across that desert and got turned back again and again, and they failed. And so he's sitting there now, and he's looking at the wreckage of all his efforts, and I'm worried he's heartbroken. I'm also worried that he's heartbroken because the country that he loves, he is ashamed. He's ashamed of his leaders. He's ashamed of his country. When faced with the choice of supporting Palestinians in the middle of a genocide and a starvation and amongst all these war crimes, our government is choosing to support and offer comfort and legitimacy to the Zionist regime. Our government is choosing the nation of Israel over the most vulnerable and persecuted people in the region. And he has to come back, and he has to come back to his home, and he won't know it, he can't recognise it, because this is not the country he thought he belonged to. Not long ago, I don't think he knew how to spell the word genocide. And now he's in a position to school our leaders on the subject. Our leaders who have no idea, who willingly refuse to accept what we're all seeing on our television screens night after night. We have to play our part, and our part is to be strong and stand firm with the Palestinians in the West Bank and Gaza and all of the thousands illegally locked up in jails.
I'm here in my capacity as a Palestinian New Zealander, and I'm here to reiterate the demands that we have. First, we call on the New Zealand government to do everything in its power to bring back Yusef, Rana, and Samuel home. We want the government to make clear what actions, what concrete actions they will take, and let the public know what those actions will be. Second, we call on the New Zealand government to condemn the illegal interception of the Global Samud Flotilla. And third, we call on the New Zealand government to sanction Israel as a means to apply pressure on Israel towards its standing current position, which is peacemaking.
Israel has illegally kidnapped citizens who were sailing on international waters to break an illegal blockade on people being subjected to a genocide. Rana, Yusef, and Samuel did not have to do this. But they are doing what governments across the world are refusing to currently do, what tens of thousands of New Zealanders have taken to the streets calling for action on, and what millions worldwide are mobilising for. They were doing their bit to try and stop a genocide. Israel has illegally abducted civilians who were trying to deliver food and supplies to civilians being illegally starved and murdered under illegal blockade. I emphasise this point of illegality because Luxon's government says that they want to be tough on crime. Our government has a legal obligation to prevent genocide. It is presently washing its hands of that obligation.
What do you say to Christopher Luxon's comments that there had already been rules of warnings in place about travel to Gaza?
These civilians were doing what they should not have had to do.
Mm-hmm.
The government, Christopher Luxon, has a legal obligation under the Genocide Convention to do everything that he possibly can to prevent genocide.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, he is refusing to disengage from business as usual with Israel, who it is well documented are currently committing a genocide. Christopher Luxon is not upholding his legal obligations.
What progress are you making with finding six MPs who are prepared to cross the floor?
So I have had a number of direct engagements with backbench government MPs in a direct personal capacity. And by and large, the message that I have received is that they are concerned about acting, and again, this is a broad brushstroke, but they are concerned about acting for fear, effectively, of being reprimanded by the higher-ups in their political parties. So I know for a fact that right now there are backbench government MPs who feel compelled to act, who do have a conscience, who have heard loud and clear from communities across Aotearoa that they want action. But as a result of us being the most whipped parliament in the Western world, they are currently terrified to step outside of their party lines. And I guess this is the clear imperative that we're putting on the table today, is that this is bigger than partisan politics. This is an opportunity for all of us as members of parliament to recognise that most of us actually won't be remembered when it comes to the history books. But what we do matters, especially when we realise that all 123 members of parliament are directly personally responsible for whether this bill progresses or does not.
As political leaders appear conflicted in the response to the situation in Gaza, especially in light of the attempts of citizens to put pressure on politicians, as well as bypass blockades themselves, with the Freedom Flotilla as an example, I was interested in the legal frameworks that exist for responding to this conflict. To discuss this topic, I spoke with Victoria University of Wellington legal professor Marnie Lloyd and University of Waikato law expert Alexander Gillespie about the obligations of other nations, including New Zealand, to act. My first interview was with Marnie Lloyd.
Okay.
Just as a general question, I was wondering, can you speak to how the events of the last 2 years kind of tie into a much longer narrative or longer history of the Israel-Palestine conflict?
Yeah. So, I mean, of course, everyone knows this is a long-standing conflict since decades, very complex. We often describe the situation and the occupation as quite sui generis, legally speaking, because there's such complexities. But certainly what we've seen in the last 2 years is a massive escalation more than anything previously.
I'm speaking especially about the flotilla activists and the detainment of those activists last week, but also, I suppose, more generally is like what's happened. How do Israel's actions violate international law, and what kind of obligation does that generate for the rest of the world or for other nations, especially New Zealand, to respond?
Yeah, great question, especially thinking about what that means for other countries, so like New Zealand. So first of all, I mean, it's been clearly documented and agreed by important international bodies that Israel is breaching international law in a number of ways. So through how the occupation is being handled, through settlements, through the wall, there's many different ways in which international law is being breached. And then, of course, more recently and how the war against Hamas has been fought and one would say against the Palestinian people, the actions taken against the Palestinian people. What's really important for people in New Zealand to understand that even though we're not directly involved in that armed conflict, legally speaking, there are important legal obligations on New Zealand and on all other states regarding the situation. And so those legal obligations come through different parts of international law. So one part, and a very important part, is about the prevention of genocide. So once it's clear that, you know, that a genocide might be happening, then there's certain duties to work to prevent that and to stop that. But also more generally under the law of armed conflict, that's sometimes also known as international humanitarian law, there's a duty on all states to not only respect that law themselves, but to ensure respect by others. So that means that there's a number of things that New Zealand could do, and it could do more than, in my opinion, it could do more than it's doing currently in order to take action and to take leadership and to try to ensure respect for those laws to prevent or put a stop to serious violations of IHL, which are war crimes, so to stop, try to prevent war crimes.
Are there any like feasible alternatives or opportunities for being able to deliver humanitarian aid or food supplies into Gaza that maybe New Zealand could endorse or support the efforts of?
So I understand that New Zealand, you know, although on some things it's not taken a necessarily more protective or progressive approach. So, for example, about not yet recognizing Palestine as a state. I understand that New Zealand has, for example, donated a lot of money. It's been a longtime supporter of the International Committee of the Red Cross and its humanitarian work. So that's a clear way where, you know, just by donating money to these organizations, that helps a lot. But of course, on the ground, it's been exceptionally tough, even for those very experienced humanitarian agencies. And I mean, my understanding is that because of this frustration with all the blocks being placed on existing international humanitarian agencies, that's where things like this, the aid flotilla, they come about, because of a sense of just deep frustration and sadness at that aid not getting through. But let's be very, very clear, the duty to provide that life-saving basic assistance for civilians who are suffering because of the armed conflict, it's first and foremost on the parties to the conflict. And in the current situation, first and foremost on Israel as an occupying power and as the party with the most control over the area and what's going on there. So the way that the law is set up is that the parties and particularly states have that obligation. Israel in particular is an occupying power. There's special rules if you're an occupier where you have to make sure that the necessities of life are provided. Where that's not the case, then these other actors can step in. So really, yeah, it's a clear legal obligation on Israel to make sure that aid can go through. They don't necessarily have to accept aid coming from other actors such as the flotilla, but, you know, we can understand why such groups decide to take those sorts of actions to make the point about how terrible the circumstances are. And, you know, clearly they're making an argument. They're showing that other states are not doing enough to ensure that aid is getting through as well.
Yeah. What would be your message to the international community or to leaders within the UN and indeed within this conflict in regard to what their obligation is to uphold international human rights and justice in this situation?
That's a big question. Look, I don't think I have any particularly clear or coherent message, but I think as you opened with, what's really important is, you know, of course, responsibility lies first and foremost with the parties and how they are conducting their war. But as you've pointed out, you know, all other states, all other members of the UN also have obligations, and they're not just moral obligations, they are legal obligations. And it's very disheartening to see, for example, states that have been continuing to transfer weapons, for example, for taking law enforcement action against people protesting the situation. So, yeah, I think, you know, if I had any message, it would be for all states, including New Zealand, to really to step up and to live up to those legal obligations that are placed upon them as third parties, you know, in the face of what's happening.
Further to this topic, international law expert Alexander Gillespie speaks to New Zealand's capacity to respond to the Israel-Palestine conflict. What kind of legal frameworks exist for sanctioning Israel for their tactics in exacerbating the famine and fatality of the situation in Gaza?
Well, starvation is clearly a war crime, and in an ideal world, they would be held to account for the International Criminal Court. The problem that we've got at the moment is that with part of Mr. Trump's 20-point peace plan is that actions before the International Court of Justice or the International Criminal Court may be void because the Palestinian Authority will have to walk away from them if they want to work with Mr. Trump. And so you've got this huge gap between the theory, which is starvation is clearly a crime, and the practice about trying to make sure those doing it are held to account.
Do you think that New Zealand should be doing more in response to the genocide of Gaza and the illegal blockade and detainment of activists?
The blockade itself isn't illegal. Under international law, you can blockade an enemy's territory. The question is what you try to stop going in. And so with a blockade, normally you would stop things like weapons or soldiers coming to reinforce an area. Food itself and humanitarian essentials like medicine are not considered contraband. And so, and we've got this rule because of terrible things that happened in the First World War and Second World War. But having said that, an occupying power can still insist on the distribution of food and humanitarian assistance. So even though they shouldn't stop it, they still control the war zone. And that means you've got to go through neutral intermediaries like the Red Cross. The problem you've got is that when the Red Cross or the Red Crescent aren't able to operate and you get a stranglehold and you get starvation.
Are there any alternative ways to be getting humanitarian aid into Gaza? Are there legal mechanisms that...
No, unfortunately, there's not. You've got this gap that I mentioned before where, like, even though starvation is a clear crime, you can't force your way into a country with lorries and then try to hand out food and medical assistance because it's a war zone. And so ultimately you have to work with the occupying power to try to gain access, which is why it's so important that you've got neutral bodies like the World Food Programme or the Red Cross or the Red Crescent so that they go in there and they do their work. The challenge you've got in Gaza is that the ability of those bodies to operate has been severely curtailed or manipulated so that preferential actors are only the ones who've got source on the ground. And so it's a terrible problem. And so the way that a country like New Zealand should be dealing with it is not only continuing to emphasise, as we do correctly, that the neutral body should be allowed to distribute aid, but we should also join the International Court of Justice case about whether a genocide is or is not happening in Gaza. At the moment, we've not yet made a decision on that point.
We've seen waves of protests across the world on this issue and weekly protests through New Zealand as well since October 2023. Do you think that there's a way that citizens can put more pressure on political leaders to act on this issue or to... Is there any role that citizens can play in terms of...
It's huge. The importance of protests can never be diminished or not taken seriously. We've got to keep using your voice. You've got to keep bringing this to the attention of policymakers and decision makers. Let your discontent be known, but under no circumstances use violence. And so, you know, protest, but protest lawfully. But this will eventually change, and the importance of that voice of dissent should not be diminished. But as I say, never use violence or threats of violence.
Is there a potential resolution here through international law that New Zealand could contribute towards or endorse that it isn't currently?
I think the point we've got to watch from here is whether Trump's 20-point peace plan is accepted in whole or in part by Hamas and the government of Israel, and then trying to work with what's on the ground, with what's there. It's very easy right now to take a theoretical point of view of what should and shouldn't happen, but we need to be aware of what the limits are with who's actually holding the power. And so there's a lot of ambiguity in the peace plan, and so we should add our voice around the peace plan and the importance of an independent Palestinian sovereign state. And so even though it's only mentioned there in part, in one of the sections, we should add to what we think that looks like and how we can support that goal.
Finally, and you've kind of already talked about this a little bit, but what message do you have for the New Zealand government and how they're upholding their obligation to humanitarian law and justice?
Make sure that we do not give up the importance of accountability for war crimes committed by any side. And so support the International Criminal Court and its jurisdiction over Gaza. Join the International Court of Justice case with the discussions and deliberations over whether genocide has or has not been occurring in Gaza.
That was international law experts Alexander Gillespie and Marnie Lloyd on the international humanitarian law surrounding the Israel-Palestine conflict.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.